Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. The state's high-speed rail authority has won an exemption from federal oversight by the Surface Transportation Board to build the first 65-mile segment of a bullet train line between L.A. and the San Francisco Bay Area. Congressman Jeff Denham, the Central Valley Republican who chairs the House Rail Subcommittee, requested the review, but before shovels can hit the dirt, the rail agency still has to land a deal with freight railroads and buy property between Merced in Fresno. It will be a busy day today in Sacramento. Legislators are set to vote on the coming year's state budget, along with dozens of other spending bills. The California Report's Sacramento Bureau Chief Scott Detrow has more.
Later today, the Assembly and Senate will approve a $96 billion spending plan negotiated by Governor Jerry Brown and top Democratic lawmakers. The budget goes with the lower overall spending total that Brown had been pushing for. Several Democratic legislators have suggested increasing spending totals later this year if tax revenue comes in higher than the governor's estimate. But Brown says he doesn't want to do that.
In general, I think prudence rather than exuberance should be the order of the day.
In addition to the main budget bill, lawmakers will be voting on dozens of so-called trailer bills, which include policy and program changes related to the budget. Most Republicans are upset about the rollout of these measures, which weren't made public until just days before the final vote. Republican Assemblywoman Kristen Olson says it's wrong to unveil hundreds of pages of legislation so close to a vote.
The fact that we're now less than 60 hours away from the deadline and only half of the bills have even been written yet is ridiculous.
Democratic leaders say the bills contain policies that have been vetted and discussed all year. But Olson says there's a big difference between a broad proposal and an actual bill. Legislators have until Saturday to pass the budget. The governor then has until the end of the month to sign it. For the California Report, I'm Scott Detrow in Sacramento.
California's multi-billion-dollar biotech industry is chewing over yesterday's landmark Supreme Court ruling on human genes. In short, they're not patentable. As KQED science reporter Lauren Summer explains, it's not a huge surprise for biotech companies, and it may not have as big an effect on the way they do business as you might think.
Patients needing genetic tests for breast cancer have only been able to go to one place, Myriad Genetics. That's because the company has held the patents on two genes, BRCA1 and 2. Other genetic testing companies couldn't offer that test until now.
I mean, we're so excited over here in the office. I mean, I think it's a huge decision.
Humberto Huerta is a spokesman for Ambry Genetics, a genetic testing company based in Southern California. He says they plan to offer BRCA 1 and 2 tests, which should drive down the cost for patients.
They're now going to have options that they didn't have before for, you know, consults, for second opinions.
Biotech companies also rely on gene patents to protect their investment as they develop drugs and treatments. But Jeffrey Leston, professor at the UC Hastings College of the Law, says they don't seem to be sweating the Supreme Court decision.
Most everyone in the industry is relieved at the very narrow scope of the court's decision.
It's narrow because the court decided that synthetic DNA is still protected. That's where companies make a copy of the gene and alter it. Big biotech firms like Genentech and Amgen rely heavily on those patents, which means their business model is still largely intact. For the California Report, I'm Lauren Summer.
We're still waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court to announce the fate of Proposition 8, California's ban on same-sex marriage. As the California Report's Scott Schaefer explains, there's disagreement about the possible outcomes.
When two same-sex couples filed a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of Prop 8, their attorney, Theodore Olson, described the issue in sweeping terms.
This case is about the equal rights guaranteed to every American under the United States Constitution.
In the summer of 2010, federal Judge Vaughn Walker agreed, issuing a landmark decision declaring Prop 8 unconstitutional. He found no rational basis for denying same-sex couples a license to marry. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld Walker's ruling, but narrowed it considerably, saying it applied only to California. Soon, the U.S. Supreme Court will weigh in. UC Davis law professor Vic Amar calls a broad decision declaring a fundamental nationwide right to marriage highly unlikely.
It's very rare for the court to invalidate the laws of two-thirds or three-quarters of the states.
Since Prop 8 passed, 11 states and the District of Columbia have legalized same-sex marriage. And Prop 8 supporter John Eastman, an attorney with the National Organization for Marriage, hopes that changing landscape discourages the high court from intervening.
Americans across the country are grappling with an intense policy debate, and there's nothing specifically in the Constitution that decides that debate one way or the other, and then the Supreme Court ought to recognize that and let it play out.
At oral arguments in March, there seemed to be little appetite for a momentous decision in support of gay marriage. And there are two ways for the court to avoid that legal question altogether. They could simply dismiss the case, allowing the Ninth Circuit court decision to stand. Or, more likely, says UC Davis Law Professor Vic Amar, is for the court to say Prop 8 proponents lacked legal standing to appeal Judge Walker's decision invalidating the ballot measure.
If the case is decided on standing grounds, the thing that we should focus on right away is what, if anything, the court says about the follow-on process.
In other words, how broadly would Judge Walker's decision apply? Prop 8 attorney Andy Pugno believes a decision based on standing means only the four plaintiffs who filed the original lawsuit would be affected.
If we didn't have standing, then there was no one present at trial to defend Proposition 8. And in a case like that, you can't declare a statute unconstitutional. The best you can do is grant the relief that was asked for, and that's for the two couples.
But if Prop 8 falls and Governor Jerry Brown instructs county clerks to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, gay and lesbian weddings could begin by the end of July. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer.
And finally, former President George W. Bush spoke to a who's who crowd of local politicians last night at the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa in Cabazon. The event was closed to the general public and media. Outside, about 60 people called Bush a war criminal for launching the war in Iraq. A Gallup poll released this week found 49% of Americans view Bush favorably, 46% don't. It's the first time since 2005 positive responses have outweighed negative ones. And that's the California Report for Friday, June 14th, the production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, with additional engineering by Howard Gelman, Seal Muller, and Rob Spate. The directors are Vinnie Tong and Paul Lancour. Our interns are Carly Nairn and Rachel Marcus. The editing staff includes Victoria Malione, Julia McAvoy, Dan Brecky, Tyke Hendricks, and Erica Kelly. Our producer is Nina Thorson. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children, and URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com.